The opinions expressed by the 1.5 doctors on this podcast are for entertainment purposes only. They are not meant to treat or diagnose. If you have a serious condition, seek medical attention immediately.
Excuse me, what Dr. Lee is trying to say is that we need to sedate the patient or he could go into cardiac arrest.
All right, I'll get the anesthesiologist.
Hang on a second, nurse. What we should probably use is marijuana. That'll sufficiently sedate the patient for surgery.
Marijuana? But why?
We don't have time for questions. We need marijuana now, as much of it as possible. Like a big bag of it.
But doctor, we don't have marijuana in this hospital. Shit.
Dr. Stephen Ogden. Dr. Came here.
Clinical muscle starts. This is Clinical Muscle on Advices Radio Network. I am your host, Dr. Vijay Puri, and along with me as always is Dr. Stephen Ogden. Doc, how you doing?
What's up, man? What's up?
It is early, and we're getting it done now. We're getting it done. It was a busy morning for me, man. I woke up at like, I think 3:45 this morning, and because one of my dogs was like hacking up fucking hairballs on the floor. Yeah, and I was like, oh Jesus, I gotta clean this stuff up, and then I could just not fall back asleep. So I was like, fuck it, I'm just gonna get up and do cardio and take care of these bastards fucking ruining my morning.
Oh my God, I totally know what that's like. My dogs, they do that too, and it's always in the middle of the freaking night.
I'm always,
like, you know, and then they puke randomly.
Yes, I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is. But these dogs, I swear to God, if I don't feed them on time, like on their set schedule, I'll have a pile of puke to clean up for sure. And then just randomness throughout the day, they'll just puke up bile. I'm like, man, what am I doing wrong here exactly? And I've like changed their food, you know. I've given them different treats, but, you know. I don't know what else to do, you know.
I think that's crazy because I mean, it makes me feel better because my freaking dogs do the same shit. They'll just puke for no reason. Some days they'll be coughing and gag up bile, and you're like, what, is there something wrong with this dog? But you know what I noticed with my one dog? She's a glutton, right? So when you put the bowl of food out, she tries to eat it all before the other guys get there, you know, and then she fills her belly up with all this food. And then she, you know, barfs it right back up. And you're like, what an asshole.
Yeah. 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 So that's been my morning. Then I had a conference call at 8 a.m. And then I was excited to get done with that so I could finally get on Skype here with you so we could get recording.
Yeah, we'll knock this one out. But listen, I got a funny story about speaking to the dogs. It's it's apparent to me now that boxers cannot swim. They are. we had a crazy scare. I think I was telling you about that.
Yep.
The little one comes flying out of the house. The gates open, skids right into the pool. And we're like, okay, let's just see what she does. Nothing. Sinks right to the bottom. Oh, doesn't make an attempt at all, and she's like drowning. We're like, oh shit. So now I'm like, and that happened to the second one too, Lexi, a few years ago, and so she don't go near the pool anymore, so now this one probably won't either.
Good.
But we're now convinced that boxers are not swimming dogs. They will not be allowed to be in the water.
Yeah, I think it's like a smushed face breed thing, because not like my pugs. When I used to have pugs, they didn't. They hated the water. They would not go in the water. They would freeze. You know. They would not. Yeah. They wouldn't even try to swim. They just sink. And same thing here with Frodo. Like we put him in a tub, and the water's like, you know, up to his chest, and he just freezes. He won't go in the water. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly what she did. Her arms went stiff.
Yeah. Yeah. They go completely stiff legged. It's hilarious. Actually, they're like they're like those fucking fainting goats. You know what I'm talking about? They get all stiff and they faint. You know.
Yeah. 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 We were like. And then we started to panic. We're like, oh, my God, I hope we didn't wait too long.
Yeah, oh, man. Yeah, that's traumatizing. That's traumatizing for the dog for sure. Yeah, she'll never do that again. At least she learned from experience.
Yeah, I was like, oh, my God, she's – what a retard.
Scary, yeah, though. That's a scary deal, though, I'm sure, for you guys, too.
Yeah, I mean, I expected her to at least make an attempt, but there was no attempt at all. And then I'm like, oh, my God, now I'm going to have to give this dog mouth to snout.
When she came up, was she like hacking up a bunch of like chlorine water and stuff?
Yeah, she was like, but then she looked like, after she got the scare out of her, she went taking off and she was frolicking around like she was happy. She was rolling in the grass like this felt kind of good, you know.
Sure. Yeah, Maybe just ease her into it next time. Maybe get her used to it. But it's probably better off that they just stay away from the pool altogether.
Yeah, well, the other thing was, even if I had a swim dog, I don't think I'd really want them in there. We got a liner pool.
Oh, they can fuck it up then, huh?
Yeah, if they got their like claws close to the side, they probably could do some, you know, scratch it and stuff if they were trying to get out. So it's probably better off. But it was just funny because I expect her to try, but she didn't even try.
Yeah, it's funny. These smush face breeds, they're hilarious like that. Even my Shih Tzu, she will swim, but she'll start to sink. Like, she gives up, you know.
Oh, gets tired.
Yeah, she gets tired. She's like, I'm just going down. my time is up here. Here we go.
So you said you had an early morning. I slept in a bit because we were out late last night. We went to my parents' house and visited them. We don't get down that way much to see them.
They live in Delaware also?
Yeah, they do. But it's kind of like they live almost like halfway to the beach, man. It's like, even from my house, it's kind of a pain in the ass. But we were down there. So when we do go down, we usually stay a good while.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Well, my parents are like, you know, 4 hours away. So
that's even more of a bear, right?
Yeah, yeah. But yeah. And usually when we go, we got to take all these damn dogs with us. But now that we got a sitter, hopefully the sitter will work out for us. So we can just start taking trips without these fucking ball and chains hanging us back, you know?
Yeah. This a sitter type, you mean, comes to the house?
Yeah, we have a house sitter. I won't board these dogs. I don't, you know, I'm not, I'd rather be home, you know, and not go on vacation if those are the options, you know. It's just, I hate to, it's like sticking them in a jail for a weekend, you know.
I couldn't, morally,
I can't do it. I would not have a good time on vacation. I'd be worried about them constantly. But if someone comes to the house and they have instructions on how to take care of the dogs, I'm like fine with that, because the pack is together, you know. We're missing, but you know, at least that won't, you know, they won't go crazy in a jail cell somewhere, you know.
Yeah, we've boarded ours, you know, a bunch of times. Well, before, we haven't boarded these three. We boarded two.
Yeah.
And you know, sometimes one time we did go away for just a weekend, and we hired a girl to come to the house and just let them out, like, you know, so many times a day, and that's fine with the two dogs because they're not in cages. Yeah. So she would come over, feed them, and it was relatively inexpensive. She'd let them out. But when you have a dog who's, you know, kennel, like the puppy now, that's tough. I don't want that dog in a kennel all day just sitting there.
Yeah.
Where if we do take her to the border, you know, they have like their own little place, and it has a dog run. It has a dog door, so they can go out and run on the dog run all day long if they want, in and out, in and out, in and out of their little. But the thing I didn't like was, I agree, the whole time when we do it, we were, oh, I hope they're okay. And every time I come back, I notice my dogs lose weight.
Oh, yeah, they probably, yeah, exactly. They don't want to eat. They're worried, you know.
Yeah, so, no doubt. I'm positive of that. They come home and you pull up and you see them and they're like,
emaciated.
Yeah, it's like, he hasn't ate all week.
Aw.
It's not that they're not feeding them. It's just like you said, it's anxiety. You know, yeah. They're wondering, what the hell? Are they coming back? Am I left? You know?
Yeah. Well, this weekend is actually my wife's birthday, and I'm taking her up north to Traverse City for the weekend. And we hired this dog sitter to come in and look after these dogs. And this is like the first time that I'm going to be away from Phineas. He's technically our puppy. He's like a year old now. He's enormous. And he's never been, like, without me. You know what I mean? So I'm a little worried about, like, you know, he's going to freak out. You know, he's going to, like, I don't know what he's going to do, you know?
Is he crate trained, or is he just roaming freely?
No, he is crate trained. He's crate trained. Okay. He's hardly ever in his crate, though. When he does go in there, it's for, like, maybe a few hours at most, you know?
Yeah, oh, that's what we do. Yeah. That's what we do. And you know what? Last week – we thought we had it nailed to where Angel was good, right? We were like, okay, we did a couple test run. Let's leave her out of the house for an hour. You know, let's leave to go to the grocery store, come back. Oh, she's doing so good. And she did good all week. And then a few nights ago, we went out, we come home. She eats the freaking remote controls. there's some dried up dog shit on the floor.
Oh, jeez. What the hell?
So she apparently shit and tried to hide evidence, and so now she's lost her privileges. She's back in the cage, ate the remote controls, you know. We walk in, she's just happy. There's bits of plastic everywhere. Oh, we're like, geez. Oh, man, she was doing – we thought we nailed it, because we would really – like to have her out of the crate, you know, like the other two.
You will eventually. She's a boxer. She's like, what? She's less than a year old still, you know?
Yeah, she just had her birthday in July.
Okay, so yes. Oh, wow. They're like the same age, Phineas and Angel is.
Yeah, I think we got them not too far apart, I think.
Yeah, so that's, you know, with boxers, it'll be probably 2 years and then she'll calm down enough to where you can just leave her out eventually. I'm hoping the same thing with him, you know?
Yeah, and I think that's about what happened with Lexi too. She just started laying down, and we're like, cool. So now her and Rascal just, you know, they're good. They don't do anything, but man, she's still a little terror.
Oh yeah, she's a boxer. That'll happen. Mm-hmm. That's how it is.
Yeah, they're ornery as shit when they're little, them dogs.
Yeah, high energy, a lot of demand. Do you ever run them or no?
What do you mean, like, I take them for a run on a leash?
Yeah, anything like that.
Fuck, yeah, no.
Not a runner. Chris
takes them for walks. Now, do we have to take – oh, God, no, I can't run anymore, man.
Or even just, like, take them to a park and just letting them fucking run. That's what I do with these guys. I just take them to the park up here and let them run. They love it. And it's great because then they're good on the leash on the way home.
Like, oh, God, I'm so nervous that she – like, they wouldn't come back.
Oh, they take off.
Rascal wouldn't go anywhere. He would just stand there and be like, am I supposed to move from his side? There's nothing hooked. But the girls, they would be gone.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if they'd ever come back. I'd be sitting out there for hours upon hours upon hours because they wouldn't come to me. They wouldn't listen. They would just run right around me. And you can't catch them dogs. Them dogs are like,
oh, yeah. They're
like Barry Sanders with fur.
Yeah. They're like cheetahs, those boxers. They'll just keep going. Yeah. Well, once we get moved out to our new place, fuck, whenever that happens, it's probably another 8 months or whatever. The 3 acres will be nice. I'll just let them outside, let them run for 30 minutes or something. And yeah, you know, it's only Frodo who needs to actually run. The other ones are okay. You know, they're big, they're giant breeds, you know?
Yeah. So,
but Frodo's, he's nuts. He's like having a little boxer in the house. You know, he's got a lot of energy. So,
well, like you with you're going to have a bigger, big, 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 big backyard, but we do have a good size backyard. So we let them out. They're like greyhounds, dude. They're just lapping. They're just, you know, they run crazy out there. So they get a lot of energy, exercise.
Yeah. That's good. That's good. See, the more exercise they get, the less terror they cause in the house. And that's the bonus there, you know?
Yeah. And the one dog, she's so smart. Lexi, the middle one, she's got it all down pat. She'll get herself so hot. She'll run outside. She'll come in panting like crazy. And dude, she's like, it's funny. She flops like she's like having a stroke right on top of the AC vent. She lays, that's her spot. Just breathing the cold air. You know, she loves it. It's funny as shit.
Yeah. So Doc, how is your ass doing? What's happening?
It's fine. It's all better. Yeah, it's all better.
No more discoloration? Is that all gone now too?
No lumps, no bumps, no weirdness. It feels fine. I did legs yesterday. Now, I didn't squat because actually I don't squat that much anyway. But I did everything else, stiff leg deadlift, side. Now, I didn't go too heavy with them because I was a little bit nervous, like, you know. But I did, you know, I was doing like reps of 15 to 20 with 185 and just squeezing. And I didn't feel anything funny. So next time I'll probably go a little higher and higher, you know, see. But I don't know, man. I think I just stretched too far and it ripped. I it's got to be what it was, you know what I mean, with the weight on there. I don't know.
And it's an odd spot. Like it wasn't – it's not origin. It's not insertion. It's not tendinous. It was in the belly, which is probably – you know, which is obviously the best place to tear a muscle if you're ever going to tear it because that the blood supply is so quick. It'll heal so fast, you know.
Yeah. It's like, I'm glad it didn't get all deformed and weird because to be honest, I don't have a very nice ass anyway. That's like, God, now if I had two like lumpy, you know, glute back there with like a freaking extra head on it or something, that would be horrible.
Geez. Yeah, that's okay.
Yeah, it's all better though.
That's what shorts and jeans are for anyways, you know?
Yeah.
It's good stuff. So
it's never hanging out.
Scott and I did Vicky Mercita's her podcast / YouTube channel, Don't Fear the Weight, you know, and she was telling us that she tore her glute too, like days before we talked. Yeah,
shut up.
So really? I was like, wow, man, in a span of like 1 month, two people. That I know have torn their glutes, and I've not seen a torn glute in my entire life up till this point.
Oh my God! What was she doing?
She was doing the same thing you were doing.
See,
stiff leg deads. Yep.
Get a good stretch. Make sure you stretch. Rip. Ass cheek came out, man. Blew out an ass cheek. So she had an, oh, that's crazy. Yeah, well, see, as I said, I've never heard anyone do it either. And who else was I talking to? Oh, I was talking to Alex. And, you know, he, you know, messaged me. He's like, dude, that's crazy. You all right? How's things going? I'm like, oh, that's funny because I've never heard of that.
I'm yeah, like, see, it's like thing. Such an uncommon muscle. I mean, of all the muscles to tear, that would be like the least expected to go.
So nuts. I know. I'm like, shit, but it's all good. I'm just glad it was. But you know what's funny? I think it feels fine, but I think it may involve a little bit of my proximal hamstring insertion back there.
Okay. Like,
yeah, because when I was doing the first time hamstring curls the other week, I could feel a little tension in my hamstring that I didn't feel before. So I'm wondering if it involved a little bit of the proximal, you know what I mean? The hamstring insertion up by the glute. Because I could feel it like a little weird, like almost like a rubbing.
You know what I mean? Yeah,
like
when
you have a tendon that's inflamed or something. But I don't know. It's all good now. It doesn't feel – it's not weak. It's the same. It's fine. But that's great. So she tore hers too.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, jeez, I watched that. It was pretty – you know what's funny is I watched that and I obviously, you know, I hadn't heard of that. Well, I mean, I heard you guys mention a couple times on B&R, but I hadn't looked, you know, watched it or anything. But I got to be honest, man. I kind of liked the video.
Kidding. Wow.
Okay. I'm thinking maybe one day me and you should Skype this just for fun because I don't know, man. It was kind of cool to see, like, we're sitting here talking, right?
Yeah, right.
And it was kind of cool to see your facial expressions, how you express yourself, because then you really get the feel of, like, if someone's passionate about something and, like, you guys were going back and forth. I don't know. I thought it was cool, but, yeah. I mean, I thought that was neat to see, you know, what's going down, sort of. You know?
Yeah, like, that's cool. That's cool.
Yeah,
my wife said the same thing, but like she's, you know, she doesn't listen to shows and stuff, and she loves YouTube, you know? She's not a podcaster, you know?
Right.
So I was just like, and plus she's my wife, you know? She's not going to say anything, you know, negative about the show. She's like, I just like seeing you. I was like, oh my gosh. I don't know, man. I don't know. I don't know that I got a face for YouTube, you know?
Nah, dude, you do. You're like a handsome brown man.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, you're tall, dark, and handsome. Oh, well.
The only thing that looked good on me were my eyebrows, and that's because I made her do my eyebrows the day before.
You don't want to come on there with, like, Bert or Ernie ones?
No,
like,
no, I can't. No. I mean, I'm always usually rocking my unibrow, you know? I'm like a... I'm looking like a slob all the time, and then I was like, "Oh shit, I'm gonna be on YouTube in front of I don't know how many watchers. I better get these things taken care of."
Yeah, you know, the one thing that stood out to me, and that's because we do the show, is that you guys didn't have headphones on.
Yeah, we didn't need them. Surprisingly, I thought for sure that we were gonna need them. But,
what did you do? Just you used listen through the microphone? Do your microphone on your computer?
Yeah, that's it. She used this. It was like a Google Meetup or something like that. Hangout, a Google Hangout. And then yeah, we just used just our microphones and stuff. There was some delay here and there, but it wasn't bad at all. Like if we were to do that right now, like take our headphones off, we'd be all fucked up, you know?
Yeah, yeah. But you know what? It came out pretty good. I mean, it sounded fine. I thought.
I thought so too. Yeah. Yeah, surprisingly.
I was like, where the fuck's the mics and the headphones at? I was, you know, expecting Scott to be up on the mic, like, you know, with the thing, and then you have your little setup, but it wasn't. But yeah, it was cool, though. It was a good show, man. I enjoyed it. I thought you guys brought some good stuff, and it was just, like I said, it was cool to see your faces and the expressions, and I never seen her before. She's a tiny little thing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's hard to tell because, like, you know, you just see her. I just see her face and her hand gestures and stuff, but she's like, I think she's like just under 5 feet.
Yeah, tall. I got that. I could tell. She looks like she's little, short. Yeah, it's funny. She's cool. Real cool.
Oh yeah, super nice lady. Super nice lady. Mm-hmm. I'm. I sent her a shirt, so she'll be rocking one. But hopefully, it's not like a dress on her. She's so small. You know?
Oh, yeah. Girls are good at cutting them things up and making them look cool anyway.
Yeah. Right. So Doc, I thought about it, and you know, we have a lot of listeners reach out to us, and a lot of people love the show, and that's awesome. I thought, you know, what else could we do to take it up a notch, you know? And one of our listeners, actually a couple of our listeners, suggested to me that we do like a health segment. Just pick a topic and run with it for a little bit. Something that's bodybuilding related, health related, digestion related, you know, just something that would help with bodybuilding altogether, which is pretty much everything. Right.
Right.
So, I thought today we could start doing that. And, we talk about the benefits of just fiber.
Yeah. 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 I mean, fiber is important in everything, right? I mean, especially when you're trying to get the most out of your sort of, nutrients, You want to make sure things are going through like they are. You know, constipation's not a good thing. So, I think that's a great idea, man.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, you've got a couple different, you know, kinds of fiber. You've got your soluble fibers and you've got your insoluble fibers. The soluble fibers are like your psyllium husk. I think wheat dextrin is also a soluble. Don't quote me on that. I'm going off of my memory here. But when you're talking about the difference in
like fruits and vegetables, oat brands, stuff like that, it's a soluble. Yeah.
So when you're talking about soluble fibers, you're talking about it's food for your your microbacteria and your gut flora. You know, that's pretty much what they eat versus feeding them is key. You know what I mean? I mean,
right.
You know, 50% of your or greater of your immune system lies in your gut, your intestinal tract, you know. So as long as those flora are healthy and well fed, you know, you kind of keep a lot of those digestive diseases away. Just diseases altogether. And your immune system is always boosted because those, you know, your flora, your gut flora are always working hard. You know, so if you want to keep yourself healthy and keep your immune system up, that's one of the best things you can do. I mean, soluble fiber, you know?
It keeps your, like I said, it keeps bowels going. Cholesterol benefits, it helps lower cholesterol. Even there's some things showing maybe blood sugar control.
And then,
you know, you got the insoluble stuff too, that, you know, that's more of the bulk.
I'll tell you why insoluble is important, because insoluble, well, not only does it help with, you know, formation of poo, but
that's it.
But what it is, you know, okay, this is going to get a little gross, but when your body is making poo, what it's doing is reabsorbing, you know, a lot of the water, you know, a lot of water in your gut. You know this because you have half a colon. Isn't that right?
Exactly.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, a lot of your water reabsorption is gone. Right.
Yep. And when you're done this top part of the little thing, when your thought, I'll tell you why they think I don't have a colon anymore.
Okay.
And, yeah.
So I mean, for the regular person that has a colon, a lot of your water reabsorption is going to come from the end game of your intestines, which is your colon, your large intestine. So water reabsorption comes from there. All of the waste from your small intestine once all your food has been digested, and that's another key, you know, with your soluble fiber. If you've got a good source of soluble fiber daily, I like to do it, you know, take like 5 to 10 grams twice a day in the morning and then right before bed. You know, you are providing your own body with the ability to increase the assimilation of the foods that you're already eating. So, I mean, for a bodybuilder, that is important as hell. You know what I mean? The more food that you can assimilate, the better gains you're going to have, the more fat loss you're going to have. It just gives you, you know what? It even gives you a healthier, better look overall.
Yeah. Yeah. So what I was going to say, another benefit to fiber is, so from a medical standpoint, besides all the other stuff like the cholesterol benefits, the like you said, the nutrition benefits, stuff like that. Well, most of us, by the time we're, let's say, 40, 50 years old, will develop in our colon. Well, let's say this. Most of us who didn't eat enough fiber growing up will develop some things called diverticuli.
There you go.
Which are outpouches in our, you know, descending sigmoid sort of colon area. And, you know, we're not sure exactly why that happens, but the biggest, you know, sort of textbook hypothesis answer is they think it's a lack, you know, our diet in America lacks fiber, sort of, you know, we don't eat enough fiber.
Just altogether. Yeah.
And basically everyone's chronically constipated. So you strain when you shit and things like that. It develops the pressure in the walls of the colon and you get these outpouchings. And so what happens? So, okay, no big deal, you know, outpouchings. Well, what can develop is in those outpouchings, you can get little flecks of stool that break off. And they can sit there and they can become infected and develop abscesses. And we call that diverticulitis. Mm-hmm. Diverticulitis is an infection in the bowel created by these diverticuli, which are created by, we think, and we're pretty sure, a terrible freaking diet, low in fiber.
Yeah.
So, well, that's why I don't have a colon, because I developed at 30 years old, which is, at that time was considered really young and not heard of. But what's a shame is that we're seeing more and more young people with it because of the way people eat. And mine perforated. I ended up getting liver abscesses, you know.
Wow.
Yeah, I had to have emergency surgery. They took half my colon out. I ended up with a colostomy bag for 5 months. And it potentially all could have been better if I would have been a good little boy and ate all my fruits and vegetables growing up. Mm-hmm. And even taking a fiber supplement. I'd have known better, but I didn't know. So that's another huge thing. I mean, you know, besides all the bodybuilding stuff, it really helps prevent diverticulosis and potentially losing your colon like I did.
Yeah. And you know, that's the benefit. You know, we're talking about diverticulitis and diverticuli. That's the benefit of insoluble fiber, because insoluble fiber has I don't want to minimize this, but it kind of cleans you out. And when I say clean you out, is you have – You have like these grooves there, you know, they pouch in and they spit out. Those are like your microvilli, they call, you know, they're villi. They're like undulations of like the lining of the gut walls, you know.
Yeah, little fingertips kind
of. Yeah, right, yeah, little fingertip extensions, you know, and you know, one of those gets pouched backwards. That's basically diverticulitis, you know what I mean? That's an outpouching of one of those microvilli, and that's what can get infected. The best way to not get them infected is to eat, you know, the insoluble fibers, because insoluble fiber creates a bulking, and that bulking forces those microvilli to move and slide and get rid of any gunk stuck in between.
Yep.
You know what I mean? That's the major importance of insoluble fiber. So there's a difference, soluble versus insoluble, but they're both super important just for health altogether. Versus more so, soluble fiber is important for immunity, food assimilation, you know, bodybuilding, all a ton of bodybuilding benefits. That's for damn sure. You know?
Yeah. Digestion, man. You want to be you want to be using the food you're taking in, and you know, that's one way to hopefully help that. But one more thing about the insoluble and just fiber in general. I've had this experience with people, and some people probably know this and some people probably don't, that, you know, a lot of people will take fiber for constipation and for bowel, you know, health and things like that. Well, one thing people need to recognize is that, fiber can go either way.
Yes.
So, yes. You know, meaning you could easily try to treat your bowel so you're more regular, so things are flowing better with fiber. But if you're not drinking enough fluid,
mm-hmm.
that could backfire and you could end up constipated from the fiber.
Exactly.
And so you got to make sure when you take your fiber supplement that you're mixing it properly, that you're drinking plenty of fluids throughout the day. And I get that a lot. I've heard that a lot, in, you know, over the years. And like, no, yeah, you have to drink water with this. It's like that'd be like, I think it made me worse or whatever. So absolutely. It could go either way. So when you take your fiber, make sure you're drinking lots of water too.
Lots of water. Like you said, you got to play with your sources a little bit too, because some sources of insoluble fiber will work better for others. A lot of people, I would say the majority of people, psyllium husk fiber works extremely well for a soluble source. But for some people, they can't tolerate it. I don't know why. It just is. You know, we switch them over to like a wheat dextrin or something, some other source of soluble source, and things get moving again. Things start feeling good. You know, it's so you got to play with it. You know, if it makes you feel better, if it keeps you regular, you know, you got a winner. But you know, if you get that gut distension and you get constipated, you know, you've got to switch that fiber source up. Or like Doc said, it could be a water balance issue. You're not drinking enough water and taking in too much fiber. That'll constipate the shit out of you pretty quickly. You know what I mean?
Yeah. What do you say the goals are for fiber? What would you think? 30 grams a day, I guess, something like that. Would you say that's what I would shoot for, somewhere around there.
I like anywhere from 20 to 30 grams of soluble fiber.
Right.
And as far as insoluble goes, it's just as much as you can kind of get in and not get sick from, you know, a lot of your insolubles are going to come from your cruciferous veggies, you know, your broccoli, your asparagus, even cauliflower, even though it's not green, very cruciferous, you know? So those are almost, I think, like 98% insoluble fiber. So a lot of people think that they're getting a ton of soluble fiber in when they're eating all these cruciferous veggies. No, you're not. You're getting majority insoluble fiber. So you're not actually feeding that gut flora. And a lot of times they'll develop a lot of, you know, gut distension and stuff from too much broccoli or something, you know?
Yes. So, I know that all too well. That's happened to me a lot.
Lots of gas and lots of distension, you know?
Broccoli is by far the worst. You got to keep that. Like I think I mentioned this before. For me, I think it's like the volume, you know, it's hard to keep track. And for me, when I'm dieting, I'm eating tons of that. Kind of carbs I mean. So then you're like, oh my God, I probably had maybe 50, 80, 100 grams of fiber today. And you're like gassing up a storm.
Yeah. Gut ache, distension, you can't poo. That's what it is. And you know, one of the keys with broccoli actually is that you got to chew it into a goddamn paste before you swallow it.
Oh, that's probably my problem because I eat shit whole.
Yeah, me too. I'll chew it twice and be like, that's good. Down it goes, you know. And the key to a lot of these cruciferous veggies, if you're getting a lot of problems with digestion and farty and gassy and even backed up, you know, is usually because, you know, that first step in the alimentary tract is your mouth. And if you don't chew it into a paste, which takes time and energy, right? No one wants to do that shit. That's usually the cause of like the gas and the distension and stuff. Either way though, I still don't eat a ton of broccoli because, even if I do chew it into a paste, and that fucking, by the way, takes forever.
Right.
I still end up getting some sort of symptoms, whether it's just gas, even if it's just a little bit of gas or whatever. Some veggies just don't work for some people. You know what I mean? It's just not all veggies are equal. Versus, you know, cauliflower doesn't do that to me. I can eat that shit whole, no problem, you know. Versus broccoli, if even though I got to chew it into a paste and then swallow it and still get some digestive discomfort, you know.
Yeah. And also when you chew it, you know, into a paste, like you're saying, that starts to activate your enzymes to start to break things down. So it helps with digestion too already. Kind of gets the party started instead of, which I, like I do, eat it too fast and swallow it almost whole because I'm always on the run. But
that's
a good topic. Yep.
Yeah. So, you know, I just figure that that's a good icebreaker to bring in this new segment because it's super important. People overlook it, especially bodybuilders. You know what I mean? They overlook the importance of that, and then you know they wonder why they stop growing, or they can't lose body fat, or they have terrible gut distension, you know, or they're not regular, you know, they're not pooping on the regular, and that's
just generally healthy, it's overall good health, you know, and that's kind of bodybuilding can be super unhealthy, so you might as well sort of take all and you know what? Let's face it, fiber supplements are pretty inexpensive. I mean, yeah, you can go on and get some of the, you know, more expensive, like, online brands per se, you know, but I mean, I honestly just, a good old Metamucil in the morning, it's not bad tasting. I mean, exactly. I mean, it's not one of the fancy ones, you know, that you can get through the supplement companies, but you know what? It will do the job and it tastes good. It's not bad. So it's not like it's an expensive addition, you know, cause we can get caught up in adding all these, you know, this supplement, that supplement, but you know, I think that's just one of the essential ones, though, and that's not that bad on, you know, expensive, right?
No, not at all. Do this. I go to Costco to get Kirkland's brand of like their Metamucil knockoff, you know. And honestly, their Metamucil knockoff is even better tasting than Metamucil is. So,
you know what? That doesn't surprise me. Costco's brand's pretty good.
Yeah, the Kirkland brand's fucking awesome. And check this out. You get like two tubs of it for the price of one tub of Metamucil. So it's like $20 and you get like 4 pounds of psyllium husk. It lasts forever.
That shit lasts forever.
Super, super cheap and it tastes good. It mixes up good. That is a keeper for me forever, I think, you know, as long as it keeps working like it does, and it will, you know.
Yeah, because, I mean, a lot of people are on budgets and things like that, and so when it comes to supplements, you know, I guess the mandatory ones is where you want to spend your money, things that are going to really help you know, your health. And we know that does.
Yeah.
And
oh, yeah.
It's not an expensive addition, you know.
That's probably like the single cheapest thing you can do to help your health out. You know, and help out your gut flora is good soluble fiber.
And vitamin D is pretty inexpensive too, and that's another goodie. Maybe we could talk about.
Let's hit that up next time because that's super important. People don't realize that it's actually, you know, a hormone too. So
exactly.
Yeah. Does a lot.
I like it. I like the idea.
Yeah. All right, Doc. What do you say we start tackling some of these questions?
Let's do it.
So, for listeners, I do the spiel every time, but I think we got. You know, if you have questions, submit them to forum.advicesradio.com. There's a sticky right there for clinical muscle under the bodybuilding and discussions talk. So click on that link. It'll take you right to all the discussion for all the different podcasts. Click on our link and you can submit your questions right there. Or, you know, if you want to be private about it, which is completely understandable, submit your questions to clinicalmuscle@gmail.com and we'll tackle them for you. So if you, I mean, just try your best to not message me with questions, and not that I don't appreciate it, not that I don't want to see it. It's just that I'll miss it. You know, it'll be like the morning that we, you know, 8 a.m. when we're trying to record, get settled, get the show started. And I will completely forget about the question that, you know, so-and-so submitted on Facebook Messenger or Instagram or something. You know, I don't want to miss those questions. They're always good questions to answer. And I don't want to make anyone feel bad, you know?
Yeah, me too. And I get a lot of private message stuff. And some of the stuff, I actually, it's not really questions, just things people are sharing with me about, like, medicine and their health and things like that. So
sure.
I get so much of that kind of stuff that if questions could, like you said, easily get lost, you know?
Yeah. And I hate that. I hate that when it happens, you know? They're like, you know, they'll message me back and be like, oh, you missed my question. I was like, fuck, you know, like I'm doing it on purpose or something, you know?
I'll tell you what, the Vices Forum is probably really the best way for us, because now we got it set up so me and Veej are actually looking at this. Before, we were doing it a little different, so we won't miss a question because we're actually looking at the board right now.
Yeah, it's right there. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and the emails, sometimes when people send labs and stuff, it can get a little hairy, like it did this morning.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
We had trouble sending some stuff over. Then I was talking to one of the fellows on there back and forth throughout the week because he was sending us sort of his labs, right? And he was said he had background information with it. And I, for the life of me, couldn't see the back. I don't know where it was. So I felt terrible because I kept saying, I'm sorry, man, I don't see it. I'm not a goofball. I just don't see it. So he finally sent me a paragraph separately in an email, like, so with the background information, because I don't know, I couldn't find it. I was just like kind of giving up on it.
Yeah. And then
I was like, I'm so sorry, man. I don't know what's going on, you know? Mm. So it's the boards, man. If you can put them up on the boards, and then it's like, if you want more private, do the email. But that's good.
That's good. All right, let's kick it off here, Doc. Hey, 1.5 Docs. I recently had some blood work done. I am currently on 150 milligrams of TestSip a week for TRT. Here is the blood work. Testosterone. Okay, so he submitted – the blood work is right there on the boards.
I love it like that.
Yeah, this is great. You know, he says it looks like testosterone is actually pretty normal, 600 nanograms per deciliter. Your range is, you know, 250 to 1100. Free test is 167, and that's above normal here. It looks like a normal range is 35 to 155 nanograms picograms per deciliter. Is it picograms or is it?
Yeah, picograms.
Yeah. So he says, my question is, I am middle side of total test, but slightly high on free test. Which number actually matters? Could I say up my dose to 180 to 200 milligrams a week to get to that 900 to 1,000 nanograms per deciliter mark? Or is the unbound test doing enough that it doesn't matter? I ask because VJ always says he feels the sweet spot is high 900s. Thanks. What do you think, Doc?
Yeah, so here's the thing. My question is, so what's he said, could I stay? Your free test is the important test, really. I mean, if you do a regular just, you know, total testosterone level without a free test, it could say 900. But you may not be using any of that, you know? And without the free testosterone assayed, we wouldn't know that. So your testosterone at 606 is giving you a free test that's out of the high normal range. You're good. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's, you know, that's where you got, you know, there's no reason. I don't see a reason for him to bump it up, especially since he's on TRT and it seems like it's doing fine. I think the free test is super important because that's the active. I mean, that's what you're using. So your testosterone that you're getting is actually being used, mostly all of it. You know what I mean? So what's your thoughts on that?
You know, it's tough. It's I'm 50-50 on this. Because here's why. Free test, just like any other, you know, free T3 or whatever, you know, that free unbound testosterone, free unbound hormone is a snapshot in time. So, I mean, that number will peak and valley throughout the day. So I don't know that I trust a free test number because here's what happens. Free test is directly related to sex hormone binding globulin.
Right.
So, I mean, sex hormone binding globulin binds free test, and what it doesn't just bind it just to remain inactive. It's studies have been showing that sex hormone binding globulin is basically a transporter hormone. So it's not necessarily a bad thing to have that testosterone bound to sex hormone binding globulin, because that means that SHBG is taking that testosterone hormone somewhere. It's not just leaving it bound and floating in the bloodstream somewhere. Not necessarily, right? So my thinking is that a free test that is in range, at least in range, you know, is going to be pretty important. But I still feel that a higher testosterone just value nanograms per deciliter is the better of the two, just because you're talking about a total hormone amount versus bound and unbound. I don't know, does that make sense to you?
Totally does. But with the don't you think there's a point sort of for TRT reasons, not so much for bodybuilding reasons.
Oh,
you know?
Yes. Yeah. No, no, no. Yeah. As far as I mean, that goes. Yeah.
If his levels are right now where they are, if we could trend it all day long, that might give us a better answer.
Yeah, right.
But,
yeah.
You know, with blood work, that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, I see what you're saying. Obviously, a little higher is always going to be a little bit better as long as it's in range. But, you know, hey, it looks like it's doing the job it's supposed to be doing. So, I mean, I don't see why bumping it up would be. But
yeah. And here's, you know, here's the other thing. I'd be interested to know what his actual sex hormone binding globulin levels are in this window here. In addition, I'd like to know what his estrogen was like, you know?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. That's always the question. There's always more things to look at to sort of give a great answer.
Yeah.
But just on the two things he gave us, that was my thoughts. I mean, I felt like it was pretty good.
Yeah, I'm responding to the part where he says, you know, high 900s, because I do like that, especially for bodybuilding purposes. But the fact is that he's on TRT and he's wondering if he needs to bump it. I don't think so. I don't think he needs to bump it. I think he's in a pretty good range and his free test looks really good. You know, it's higher than your range is, normal range. Again, that's a snapshot in time. We're not, you know, 2 hours from now or post training or something, it might be completely different. His free test, right? So
you're probably right. I mean, 900 probably is, you know, sort of a sweet spot. I think he's probably in a good range right now.
Unless, I say safe. I think he's safe. I don't think there's any reason to bump, especially if he feels pretty good. You know, if you feel pretty good and your gym progress is going great, you're able to lose body fat, your sex drive is doing really well, I don't see any reason at all to mess with that, you know. Just look, take a number and a value for what it is. And, you know, it's like weighing yourself every day. Yeah, okay, it's good to know to get an idea, but how do you look in the mirror? You know what I mean?
Exactly.
That's kind of how you should be kind of looking at this if you're a TRT guy, you know.
And how do you feel? Like you said, are you still feeling reference back to before you started the TRT. Were you sluggish? Was your libido low? Were you having trouble with body fat? And now that you're at this level of 606 and 167.6 free test, are those symptoms better?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Because if they're not, maybe this isn't the spot for you. And Veej is right. That's what I think that's what you mean by the sweet spot. Some people don't get there until they're over 700, 800, 900.
Yeah.
But in this guy's case, but you're right. We don't know what his estrogen level is. We don't know what the SHBG is. So that's important too. But just based on those two numbers, I mean.
Yeah. 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 It's interesting. It's sex hormone binding globulin has gotten a really bad rap over the last, I don't know, 20 years or 30 years even. But But the new documentation coming out, it looks like it was just like misunderstood. It's like insulin for glucose, you know? It's a transporter. Sex hormone binding globulin is a transporter for sex hormones, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah. So I guess the jury is completely is out still, but it's looking good, you know? I just tend to, knowing that information and understanding bodybuilding, I always look at that total testosterone value now, and I think of that as a more important value than free test at this time. Unless, of course, free test is fucking just in the tank, you know?
Yes, there you go. Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, like you said, for bodybuilding purposes and on CRT, obviously you'd like things higher. That would be, so if you're feeling good and labs are looking good, I'd say just keep doing what you're doing.
Yep, do nothing. Yeah.
Hey guys, Scott McNally here.
And this is VJ Peary.
You guys know us from here at the Advices Radio Network. Well, we also have another show, Bodybuilding Nerds Radio. We've got everything from supplement reviews
to shout outs,
listener questions,
and of course, our weekly bodybuilding podcast reviews.
So check us out every Friday.
Or whenever you feel like cooking or doing your cardio or basically wasting time with us.
You can hear us at bodybuildingnerds.com.
Also on iTunes. Bodybuilding Nerds, it's time to get nerdy.
Another question here from the boards, for the 1.5 docs. I'm 42 years old and have been on doctor prescribed TRT for 2 years now, 200 milligrams of Testosip and 200 milligrams of Deca a week. My wife is a nurse and administers all of my injections, which makes things easy and pain free. She's a pro. My question is regarding to the buildup of scar tissue from repeated injections. We currently rotate delts and glutes, but every once in a while, maybe twice a year, a knot of scar tissue will form and my wife will actually feel next time we go to use that site. Of course, she's injecting around these knots. Would going to 1.5-inch needles help alleviate this? We currently use 1-inch 23-gauge 3-milliliter syringes because that's what doctors prescribed. But I have a good relationship with my endo and he would happily prescribe whatever size I ask for. P.S. Dr. Ogden helped my wife and I a couple of weeks ago in regards to my father-in-law's blood work. We couldn't get a hold of his doctors or nurses to answer a disturbing blood test result. Thanks to Dr. Ogden, confirmed my wife and I's concerns about my father-in-law's kidneys health. We immediately rushed him in for treatment, and things are looking up for him now. That was a true humanitarian act by the doc. We send our sincere thanks. Look at you, doc. You're like an angel.
I'm friends with someone on Facebook, I feel like we, and on the boards and bodybuilding places, I feel like we develop sort of like a friendship, even though I may never meet you in person. Sure. You know what I mean? And if someone reaches out to me as a friend and just has a simple question, and in this case, it wasn't really that simple. It was potentially life-threatening. It definitely was life-threatening.
Oh, boy, yeah.
What am I going to say? No, I can't help you.
That yeah, be, no shit.
Anyone who knows me, even by social media, would know that I would never say that. I might say, you know, I'm not sure. That's tough, but I would never, like, man, that's not me. I'm not even that kind of. It's just my personality, man. I'm glad it worked out because, of course, whenever people do ask me questions, I am a doctor and I'm always a little afraid to give my opinion. The next thing you know, I'm going to get a lawyer in the mail. Yeah. But I also see my doctor thing. It can be a curse sometimes, but it's a gift, man. I did the work and all, but I mean, I'm able to help people even with just some simple information, just to make a decision. Should we go or should we not go? And my answer to this family was, yeah, you got to go. And I'm glad it was right. And it took me 6 seconds to answer the question. I mean, it wasn't like something bad. And
jeez.
I mean, it's not like I gave an answer. I said, man, I agree. You guys should take him to the hospital. And so I'm glad it worked out, man.
Yeah, good.
I don't think it's anything. I would do that for anybody, man. I would do it for a person on the street. I mean, you know, I don't know. It's just me. I don't know.
Yeah. You're a good dude. So what about these knots? What are you thinking?
All right. So, his first question was, would going to a 1.5 inch needle alleviate this? You could go deeper. You're just going to get deeper problems, probably.
Yeah, you're going to get deeper scar tissues. What's going to happen?
Yeah, I think his issue, especially if he's on, prescribed test sip and DECA, is the 23 gauge, man. Yes, that's a draw up needle. So, yeah. I mean, for most people now, if you've been on injecting something for 50 years and then you've rotated spots, eventually you may have to go to a thick gauge needle because that's the only way you're going to get it through. Mm-hmm. But right now you're just giving yourself way too much scar tissue and trauma with that 23 gauge, 23 gauge, a 20 gauge, 18 gauge. To me, those needles are draw up needles. Those are the kind of needles you want to draw up and then switch the needle to something smaller, like a 25, yeah, a 27. And even though, so that's where the first thing I would say is I would talk to your doctor about maybe getting the 25 inch tip Lorlock on your, in addition to the 23 gauge, draw up with the 23, switch the cap, and then inject with something smaller, 25, 27, and stick. I don't think you need to go 1.5 inches. I think what you're going to find is that's going to increase your injection time by 50%. It's going to take forever to get it out of there. Yeah. And then the other possibility, which maybe your endo would scoff at, but in most states, insulin syringes are, yep, prescription free. I would venture to say with your sip and your TRT shot, you could get away with an insulin pin if you're muscular enough and lean enough. Easy. Yep. And then there is the one, what's the name? There's a protocol that one doctor's a huge TRT doc that does sub Q shots. So my big sum it up, I don't know what you're going to say, but I think he needs to switch his type of needle he's using.
Absolutely. It has nothing to do with how long the needle is. It has everything to do with the gauge. That 23 is almost fucking cannon.
Yeah.
So, mm-hmm. And that'll oh yeah, you will get knots, absolutely, and your scar tissue will, cuz I mean, man, you're stabbing yourself with a fucking steak knife once a week, It's like, you're going to get scar tissue. That's just what happens. Insulin syringes, you can go to any Walmart, anywhere, CVS, ask for insulin syringes. They cannot refuse you. They're completely legal to have. You don't need a prescription to get insulin syringes.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure in most states. I know Delaware just wasn't like that, but just within the last couple of years, I know they switched over, so you can get.
Yeah. So okay. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I guess check your state laws. I don't know where he's coming from, but I know that at least in the states that I've lived in, that's never been an issue for anything. And yeah, if you, and you know what, if 1 milliliter is too much, you could split that up into two shots per week and use an insulin syringe and still get way less scar tissue.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. The problem with the insulin syringes is that you gotta be lean enough. You gotta have lean spots. Most people can't do insulin syringe injections into their glutes. Because most people have too much, there's like an inch of fat on there. You're just injecting the fat. That's not always the best option. You want to be able to hit the muscle. I like quads, especially with like a half inch insulin syringe that's shallow enough to get the medicines in without, the potential to hit any nerves or arteries or anything, because, quadriceps are extremely vascular and very nervous, right? So
yeah, and even, without his, like I said, depending on the state, most states, insulin is not a problem. And there's also medical supply companies online where you could get, you could order things like that if you needed to.
Oh, yeah, in bulk.
In bulk. So, I mean, I think to sum it up, just, and you know what else? Maybe he's using Delta glutes. Did he say how long he's been on TRT for? I don't know. You could try, like Veach said, to learn how to inject in other areas like a quad, stuff like that, because that's a huge muscle that you're not using. And I mean, I'm not a big fan of that, only because I know it's completely legit. It's taught in schools and everything, but most people do delts and quads, but I just get paranoid about the nerves and stuff.
Well,
like that.
Yeah, if you're going to use an inch needle or a 1 inch needle, you could get yourself into some problems for sure. Yeah. But an insulin syringe, that's like a half inch, half inch to 3/4 inch, you should be fine unless you have like no leg mass.
Yeah. Tell your doc. to switch that harpoon for you.
Yeah. That's no good. No steak
actually,
knife.
No. Keep the harpoon to draw up it if you and but get a different tip. They're Lorelock. You could get a 25, a 27. You'll be fine.
Yeah. Or and you can use that 23 gauge to draw up and then backload an insulin syringe. You know.
Yeah.
So that's an easy way of doing it too. Or just getting. I guess you could always get like 27 gauge, like the doc says too. And I don't know, man. It's you can just switch up, rotate sites, keep rotating sites, and the smaller the syringe gauge, the less the scar tissue. That's usually
less trauma. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Man, you keep sticking yourself with that, he's going to have boulders everywhere.
Oh yeah, that would look nasty after a while for sure. Not only that, man, that hurts your muscular contractions too. So going to go train and stuff, that's no good, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah. We got a question here. We're going to hit our emails up here, Doc. Hey, Docs, love the show. Just got a quick question. I'm hoping to get an answer soon because this time it's sensitive. All right. I'm currently on TRT about 4 weeks after switching to a new protocol, and I'll be pulling labs at 6 weeks. My wife is due with our second child in the next few weeks. And I need to get to the hospital to get my hospital bag ready to go. Here's the question. Could I preload my syringe with 60 milligrams of test sip, my current dosage, he says, so I don't have to carry around a 10 milliliter bottle? I inject every 3.5 days, and I'd really like to keep things consistent considering I'll be going for blood work soon. Any suggestions on how and where to keep the syringe as to minimize contamination? I would obviously recap the needle and stick it back to the wrapper, but what else could I do? I use a 25-gauge 1-inch pin, if that makes a difference at all. Any suggestions would be helpful. Thanks and help. Thanks for the help, and keep up the great podcast. You guys are the best. Well, thank you.
Oh, yeah. Thanks, man. I'm kind of, I guess I'm 50-50 on this about the preloading thing. Look, if he's going to preload one syringe for one day in the hospital or, I think you could do that safely, the night before. And if his TRT is all prescribed and everything, what I would do is I would do it, but I wouldn't do it days and days in advance. This may be crazy paranoid. I get worried about it sitting in there and maybe bacteria or maybe, God forbid, like some pieces of the plunger degrade or.
Oh, yeah, I guess. I never even thought about that.
Yeah, like the rubber degrades. Listen, I could be a complete freak about that, but that would be me. But I would say a day before you could load it up, what I would do, he's talking about what would be the best way to stay sort of sterile. I would just load it up and bring an unwrapped pin with you so that that the needle that you're going to use is coming straight from the wrapper. As long as you draw it up sterilely, nothing's going to get inside that plunger unless you take the tip off and start waving it around, or you got to drag it.
Start waving it around. act like you've got like a knife and
watching the oil fly everywhere. I think that's totally reasonable. I would say even for a couple of days, it'll probably be fine if you need to do a couple of them. And I would bring, your unwrapped injection pin with you, with your alcohol pads and everything else. And put in a nice, clean plastic bag, and I think you'd be fine. I mean, I don't think you'd get – as long as you clean the area, change it to a sterile needle, nothing inside the plunger is going to really get in, sort of tampered. That's what I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I don't have anything to really add to that.
But I do get worried about, if you did it for a week because – I don't know. Then you might run the risk of something happening, whether
– Well, I mean, look at it this way. I mean – that's why they created vials, and that's why they created syringes, because one is for storage and one is for immediate use. Just think about it that way. You know what I mean? You want to keep your duration pretty, pretty tight. If you're going to be backloading syringes, you don't want to do a bunch in advance, and just let them sit in there. That's not what they're medically designed for.
That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Not to say that it wouldn't work. It's just that, if you really are thinking about contamination and possible risk, the obvious solution, would be to, keep that duration as small of a window as possible.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's the part I would get worried about. Like, he's trying to plan ahead. Maybe let's say his wife was today. Tuesday.
Tuesday. Yeah.
Let's say his wife's not getting induced till next Monday. I wouldn't start loading up my 2 or 3 pins today and leave them in the closet and, you know, in your dresser or whatever until next week. I would maybe Sunday night you could do that or whatever. You know what I'm saying?
Like, yeah.
Just keep a short duration and make sure you do everything sterile. Once you do, I think you'll be fine that way.
Yeah. Yep. I don't have much to add there. Let us know how it goes and good luck to you. question here. Another one from our emails. This question is from he wants to remain anonymous, so I won't say.
Yeah, no, you know, emails, even though you're seeing their name,
anonymous. So, killer podcast, guys, very informative yet funny as fuck. My new favorite podcast, sorry, New York Muscle Radio. Oh, sorry, guys.
Oh no, actually, they're one of my favorites.
So mine too. I listen to them all the time.
I like their new Facebook Live thing they're doing. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think that's cool as hell. I think, and then it converts over into podcasts. You don't have to be there for the Facebook Live or whatever, but it's kind of a cool option, though. You know.
I don't know if I'd want to take live questions though. So somebody might ask something. You hear me do this.
Yeah, no time to think. You got to be on your game. Yeah. So this fellow's question here, he says, here's some background info. I'm 35 years old, 6 foot, 198 pounds, and about 15% body fat. Diet is spot on, in which I follow a flexible diet during off season and a typical bro diet when dieting. I usually train about 5 to 6 days a week, but gains have always come very slow. For many years, I have worked out. I've been seeing my general practitioner for over a year now with and have had numerous blood tests, which conclude I have very low test and LH levels. Energy levels fluctuate, and I basically live off of coffee and pre-workouts as I feel flat most days. He's kind of a stimulant junkie, he says. About 4 years ago, I did a
he said like me.
like Steve, stimulant junkie. About 4 years ago, I did a 10-week test D-ball cycle, 2 milliliters of SUS 250 a week and 4 weeks of D-ball with AIs but no PCT. During the cycle, I did not see any significant results to my physique except for the D-ball. I'm also a shift worker but only do days, but I have 14-hour round drive to work, which I do every week. Wow. One of those trips is an all-nighter after work. Been doing this routine for about 8 years. Holy crap. So he has 3 questions here. Okay. Let's start with that first one. He says,
oh my God, I was trying to wrap my head around his job. He drives 14 hours to work.
That's crazy, right? So that's wild.
Whoa. He must stay there or something.
Yeah. He has to. Yeah. He says it. What, he does it once a week or something like that.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Which I do every week. That's crazy. unless he means like 14 hours of driving per week. You know what I mean?
Oh, maybe. Yeah.
Maybe
yeah,
that's
yeah.
what he means. I don't know. But his first question is, would have this previous cycle fucked up my levels, or is it possible my levels have always been low?
Oh God. I hate to say this, but he did one 10-week cycle 4 years ago.
Yeah.
I have a hard time believing that's going to knock him down to the levels when we looked at his labs. But could it? Look, it all depends. Like, some people are really, you could have screwed yourself up on that one time. In my opinion, I don't think so. I think you probably are walking around with low test. Maybe you're 35 years old now. Maybe I would lean more towards that. I mean, could it do that? Absolutely. One cycle, you could be a super unlucky person and shut you completely down.
It can happen.
He didn't do a PCT, which I don't know.
I'm not really a PCT guy.
I'll leave that one alone. I don't think Arnold M had PCT, leave that one alone. But anyway, I guess there's a possibility it could have. Yeah, you could have been very unlucky. It shut you down and you were 31 years old and you just didn't respond. And maybe you're on the lower end of normal to begin with. And then boom, now you have low testosterone. So, but in my heart, I'm like, no, you probably just had low testosterone. But yes, it's definitely possible. I mean, it could have happened. You could be that unlucky guy.
Yeah, after 4 years, you should bounce back. I mean, you should have bounced back after about a year and a half, and at least somewhat bounce back. But this looks like it shut you. You know, I mean, if that was the culprit, then this thing shut you down for life. You know what I mean?
And
I just don't see that happening with a 10-week cycle. Sorry, you know. I just think that
I mean, you have to be super unlucky.
Yeah. I mean, it's not that it can't happen. It definitely can. And maybe he's one of the unlucky ones that happened to him. I'd be, you know, the only way we'd know for sure is if he'd had blood work before that cycle. You know, that's the only way we'd know.
And listen, that might be a good point. Stamping point is, you know, if you're a bodybuilder who's been natural for so many years or even, you know, and you decide to go into the dark side, you should probably get yourself a baseline everything.
Always.
And then you'll know if you screwed yourself up.
And here's the other thing about that. Like, if you don't get the blood work done before you decide to hop on any gear, how do you even know how much gear to take? You're just shooting in the dark. You're like, everyone else uses 500 milligrams. Well, I will too. You know?
Yeah, that's great. That 500, that's a good one, isn't it? Always the one you read for.
That's like your bro answer for every first cycle, you know?
That's 500.
Yeah,
but
I mean, you know, what if your blood values were already like, you know, 1100 nanograms per deciliter, you know, or something like that?
You may not need that much, you know.
Who knows? Maybe you need more, you know. So it's just like, it's just silly to do that. Anyone who's thinking about, you know, starting their first cycle, whatever, go get blood work done first. Figure out what your levels are at. Go from there. That's the only logical way of doing it. Otherwise, you're just shooting in the dark. Stupid.
Yeah, but you know what? That doesn't probably happens less than we would like.
Yeah, but you know, this is our show, and this is what we're telling you to do. So fucking do it, right? So But I don't know, man. I don't know that one cycle would have shut him down like that. You know?
Yeah, I don't know. He probably had low level anyway. Yeah, I mean, he did 2 cc's of Susta weekend, and well, I don't know how much D-ball I did, but I don't know. 4 years, I think he would have bounced back by now.
Yeah, and he says, how long has he been training for altogether? He says several years, many years, and he said he's always been a slow responder, which immediately tells me that, you know, he probably had low tests to begin with.
Unlike you, who responded great. Why? Just like you were just talking about this, because you probably – your high test level. You were a good responder. You didn't need to jump to the dark side.
Right. So,
as
I mean,
you said another podcast.
Right. Yeah, I didn't need it. At the time, I didn't need it.
Well, now you're old.
Eventually, that shit catches up with you. You don't remain 21 years old forever, is the thing. Okay. So here's the next question on here. Question number 2 is, would I be better off seeing an endocrinologist or a TRT clinic? I have a good general practitioner, but I think he's scared of the T word.
Oh, yeah. Look. That reminds me, I'm going to do his parenthesis thing real quick. Scared of the T word. I see. Yeah, that's still like so many doctors are. I don't get it. And I had in conversation with someone this week who privately asked me for some recommendations on what labs they should get.
Okay.
And I told him what I would think is as a doctor and a person to get. And when they got to their doctor was literally afraid. I think said this to him, afraid to do their testosterone and free testosterone. Because this person's not that old. He's not like old fucker like us, like 45, you know, like years old. And I think the reason in my thought was his doctor don't want to know because they may not know what to do with it.
Exactly. And
they think it's like writing a prescription for oxys or something. I mean, it's not. So anyway, okay. So his question is better off endocrinologist TRT. I think that's a personal choice and a financial choice. Mm-hmm. I think if you're someone who has some disposable income, you want to get the maximum out of your, HRT sort of thing, I think a good clinic would be the best way to go. They're going to be a little more open, a little more open-minded. They're dosing maybe a little bit on the higher side, but the downfall of that is you may have to pay cash, you know, you may have to, you know, buy your scripts or whatever. And you know, you might end up going to the endocrinologist and they'll have you do Clomid for, you know, what, and then have you all this stuff. I don't know, but of course endocrinologist, that's what, you know, and unfortunately these days that's, if you do it through your GP, I hate that word GP, by the way, a family medicine doctor, by the way, GP, please no one ever call me that because that implies that I didn't do a residency. that implies that I came out of medical school and just hung a shingle up, which is not. Yeah. When you see general practice, generally that person didn't finish their residency.
Oh.
And they have, because you can get them. You know, I got my medical license to practice after my first year internship. I could have quit right then and opened up a general practice.
Right.
Yeah. So anyway, that's just a little. So I hate to say it because the endocrinologist, I should be a doctor. Say, go to the endo, but I don't know.
No, I'll say it for you then. Fuck no, not the endocrinologist. And I'll tell you why. Most endocrinologists are there basically to deal with diabetes patients. Okay. They are terrible with hormone therapy. Don't know why. They've got all the schooling in order to back it. They should have all the understanding, but man, they don't know jack shit about, they know even less than your general practitioner does, you know? So that's just a blanket statement. That's a generality. I'm sure there's good endos out there. I just don't know of them. But what I can tell you is that these TRT guys, specific TRT clinics, this is what they do. And this is how they make their living. And this is what most of them understand pretty well what you should and shouldn't be doing and how to take care of these, side effects that pop up, you know, And they're not going to fuck around with you either. You know, you go to an endocrinologist, they'd be like, let's try this first and let's try it. Before you know it, you've tried a couple different things for the last 2 years and you still feel like shit. These TRT clinics, they don't fuck around. They will hook you up with testosterone because you've got low testosterone. They don't putz around and try Clomid or HCG or anything. You know what I mean? They go right to the source. If you have low test, you're going to get test. You know what I mean? So, I'm, you know, you probably will pay for it. I don't know how good your insurance is. Some TRT clinics are actually pretty good with insurance. So,
that's good. I see.
You know, you might get, your blood work will be covered and that's a major expense. You know, some of your meds partially will get covered too, you know, depending on, you know, true low testosterone, how they submit it. And that's all in their back end of how they do things. But yeah, I would highly, highly recommend if you want this taken care of quickly and not to fuck around too much, TRT clinic. Absolutely.
Yep. I think I agree with that.
His third question is, does low test affect repair? I've had a few nagging injuries that won't go away. Tennis elbow, AC shoulder pain, no cortisone injections as yet, but been thinking about peptides.
I mean, I would go out on a limb and say it could, you know, I mean, but I don't know. I can't think of an exact mechanism of it. But yeah, I mean, look, your metabolism's probably not right. Your immune system may not be up to par because your hormone levels are off. And so in a way that could definitely do that. I mean, in a way it could contribute to that, but I don't know if directly it repairs anything.
No, it won't be directly. They're going to be, I will say yes. I'll go out on a limb and I'll say yes, it will definitely, most definitely help repair, because that's what anabolics do.
You know, right, exactly.
They heal and repair muscle tissue, tendinous tissue, whatever tissue that needs sparing. That's what's going to get repaired, healed and repaired. And this through several. And this is all indirect stuff. First of all, increased protein synthesis.
That's what I'm saying. It's indirect.
Yeah. And second of all, IGF-1 levels increase. IGF-1 levels are huge with repair. That's what they do. You know, and tertiary is, you know, food assimilation. Once you have a proper nutrient partitioning, which is another thing that, you know, most anabolics will do, especially testosterone, proper nutrient partitioning, as long as your diet's good, a lot of those nutrients are going to go into healing and repair mechanisms in your body. So yeah, nagging injuries, well, I think it'll definitely help. I don't know, man. As far as peptides, that's hit and miss. You know, again, you're dealing with that IGF-1, increasing IGF-1 levels in the body, essentially, with any peptides. You know, growth hormone releasing hormone, growth hormone releasing peptides, all those really ever do is increase growth hormone, which in turn, liver, you know, converts that back over into IGF-1 levels. Increase IGF-1 levels, you have increased healing capabilities. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and the one peptide that actually, what's funny is more and more lately, I'm just like, I'm not sure why the medical field isn't taking. The more I read, the more I hear anecdotally, people TB500 sounds like it probably really works.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I'm sure everything's hit or miss, but I think if it was, synthesized by one of our, you know, a pharmaceutical company, and it was used in, and that stuff sounds like people get benefit from it. I mean, obviously it's not supposed to be for human consumption. It's a research peptide or whatever. But the more I read about that, I don't know, man, I'm starting to think that stuff might be something that the, you know, medical community might be missing out on, and maybe the bros are onto something. Yeah. I don't know.
See, I don't know enough about that. In fact, I should do some research on it, because I don't know hardly anything about it.
Yeah, just check it out, and I don't know. The more I read about it, it sounds like people really do benefit from that, and I will see in the future. I've even read some things where people's orthopedic doctors were like, you know, I can't really tell you this, but maybe you can try that, you know, like let's. But that's the only one as far as he mentioned peptides that I've read about, and was like, man, that sounds like it probably is good. You know, it probably has a benefit there. So anyway, I just threw that out there because I was reading about it. It's a little intriguing to me.
Is it an actual peptide? Like, is it a protein hormone or?
It's thymosin. It's thymosin beta 4, and it's sort of
thymosin. Yeah. That's a protein.
It's a peptide, and it increases, you know, cellular healing and blood flow and you know, things like that. And it just sounds, the more people have been using it, has an anti-inflammatory sort of effect.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've read a lot of stuff online, and people are like saying it's, you know, that they've got, they of all the things they notice when they use that, it's like it helped. And you know, the thing is, but like I said, it's a peptide. I don't know. I'm just curious about that. That one there does have my curiosity piqued.
Hmm. So I guess in short, low testosterone will definitely impair healing capabilities for sure, through, and not directly. This is all indirect stuff, but those are several pathways that, you know, that are anabolics are known for. You know what I mean? But TB500, it could be a good maybe research. Start researching that. And as far as other peptides go, I don't know, man. I wouldn't necessarily mess around with too many other peptides, but the TB500 does sound interesting for sure.
Yeah, it seems like it might be helpful. Yeah, I mean, of course, if you have to get that. It's for research purposes only, so you have to use it for your manatee.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Your pet manatee.
Let's see here. We've got what did you think of his labs? This fella, he sent his labs over.
Oh, yeah. Well, I got to pull them back up.
Yeah.
It's
just low testosterone, low.
I mean, I think overall everything was decent except what his hormone levels were definitely off. I forget what his test level was. His thyroid – oh, this is a good one. On his – the TSH – he only had a TSH done. And interestingly enough, on his labs, this one actually says TSH 3.1, normal range, euthyroid level. However, if hypopituitarism is suspected, free T4 assay may be indicated. So that's kind of what we've been saying the last couple of times.
Yes, thank God someone said
that. You need the whole panel. It actually is printed on his lab. It says that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think his labs overall are pretty good. I mean, obviously, except that he got a cortisol done too, which I believe was fine. I think overall, and it looks like he is trending in the low, you know, for his testosterone. I think basically that's the only thing on it. It was jumped out at me.
Yeah. See, this is kind of interesting. His testosterone is like, you know, bottom of the, like less than the normal. His luteinizing hormone is like next to nothing. Yet his free test is in the normal, technically in the normal, even though it's kind of low, you know? So that's another thing. Like, I see that all the time. I'm just like, I'm not sold on that whole free test thing.
The only way I could describe that, like the way I reason that in my mind is that whatever, you know, he's low, but whatever testosterone he's having is at this point still being used, but that's going to fizzle out very shortly. That's the way I think of that.
I could definitely agree with that.
Yeah. It's kind of like for me, when I look at iron assays, if someone has a serum iron, it's normal, but a really low ferritin. Pretty soon that low iron and that high iron in the serum is going to be gone because it's pulling from the – that's the way I reason when I see a low total test with a high free test or a normal free test is that it's using what you got left, but that tank is about to run out.
That's a good point. Yep.
That's the way I look at it. I mean, whether that's the sort of biological thing that's going on, but when I see that on someone, I go, yeah, he's getting that because his body's like, I better use what I got, but soon it's not going to be there at all. That's just the way I see it.
I like it.
So sometimes you just got to use Deductive reasoning, right?
Yep. good old fashioned common sense. Yeah.
Yeah. At this, for him, the free test is probably less important, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
His total's gone. He's going to run out soon.
Yeah. Definitely. So hit that TRT clinic ASAP. Next question here. This is our last question here, Doc. But and he sent. He looks like he sent his labs too. And this fella is from overseas. Looks like I am 24 years old, a master's student from Germany who listens to every single show of you since Project Bodybuilding Times with Matt. Wow, great! And I would like to ask you guys for some advice. To give a little background, probably since 4 years or so, I struggled with mid form of depression and had weekly therapy sessions and so on until 2 years ago. And since then, I did not really feel great most of the time, but also not terribly depressed anymore. Considering my age, I am not sexually active at all, enough, he says. I have been told to be at least at bit. I'm having trouble reading this, but he says, I've been told to be attractive, so it's not that I could not find a female partner. So maybe half a year ago or so, I finally stumbled over an article of symptoms of low testosterone and so on, and I thought that pretty much all those described symptoms matched with me. Last week, I finally went to my new family doctor because I moved from my parents' place 4 years ago. And since then, go to this new doctor and tell him about my zero sex drive, bad mood, crying over little things, and get him to test my blood hormone values. So this Monday, he calls me and tells me about the results, which I attached to the email. So we've got those right here. As I see it, my FAI and LH overall test levels are problematic. FAI, I'm not sure what FAI means. Does he mean FSH?
Yeah, I don't know. That's the thing. His labs are actually, a lot of them are in another language. It looks, you know, different.
Oh, okay. It's got to be follicle-stimulating hormone.
But I'm sure that's FSH. And what I was thinking when I looked at him is sort of less – I'll just look at the – because the ranges are even different than I'm used to, you know?
Yeah.
But, I mean, I know what low is on anything. It's outside the range, you know, kind of thing. So, yeah. I think that's probably – that's what I was thinking he meant was the FSH.
Okay. And he says, I've never used any kind of steroids, SARMs, et cetera, in the past, and which could explain my low levels. My doctor assigned me to an endocrinologist for further treatment and hopefully some form of therapy, but the appointment is not till next January. Wow. So I wanted to ask you guys what I can ask my family doctors to help me out with in the meantime or what I can do to feel better. I would have to choose between being fertile and having more life quality. I think I would choose life quality. I just added two pictures, one recent and one 2 years ago. From my trip to England at and Dorian's place. Oh, wow. He was at Dorian's place. Cool.
Yeah. The picture says Temple Gym on it.
Oh, that's fucking awesome. So that you can see that I at least try to build my physique. Yeah. You know, he looks good. Like, he's very lean. He's got a decent physique on him. I don't know what his weight is. He's probably kind of like tinier, you know?
Yeah, but he is freaking lean, though.
He is lean. Like, I wouldn't – you would not guess by looking at him that he had low T, but by looking at his blood work, for sure something wrong, you know? So I don't. Gosh, what would you tell us this young stud here?
Listen, what's crazy is his appointment is in next January. We hate our, a lot of people have problems with our medical system here, but that's sometimes one of the downfalls of some of the other countries' medical systems.
Yeah, takes
time to get what you want. You'll get done, but it takes time, and you know, it doesn't cost you much from what I understand.
Or nothing.
But yeah,
at all.
Anyway, or nothing at all. From what I understand, I'm not big. You know, I don't look into that too much. But yeah, that just was interesting to me. So what's he basically asking? You know, what would he talk to? I would go to his doctor and talk to them about how he feels. You know, did he mention that? But if he didn't mention it here, he did send me an additional little information that I didn't send over because it's not that big of a deal, that he has had some depression in his history. Did he say that in the beginning?
Yes, he did. Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Yep. And listen, that if you are having low testosterone, that's a symptom.
I mean, for sure. Yeah.
And he is taking a medicine for it. And he may not, maybe he doesn't need that medicine. So I would go with that with your doctor saying, hey, that would be your biggest driving. I need something sooner. Sort of say, my testosterone's low. I know it can be linked with depression. Are we kind of treating, like, putting a Band-Aid on my symptoms here or missing something? It's like, so maybe they could start him on something sooner. That might be his sort of best go. I don't know why they wouldn't treat it anyway. Again, he's from another country. It's hard to tell, but I think that's what I would tell him, your symptoms. You know, you have the depression. That could be part of it. And see if they'll start treating you for it sooner. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I don't see any reason why his current doctor couldn't help him out with something. Even a goddamn Androgel would help. Yeah. You know what I mean? Just something, yeah. Anything will help him at least feel better. And you know, if he tells his doctor that, look, these are my values, can I get prescribed some testosterone just to help me get by until January, until the endocrinology? I don't see why his doctor would not help him out. You know. I don't know how stuff works in other countries as far as, you know, overseas, but here and in Canada and Mexico – well, Mexico is fucking legal, so it's fine. But here in North America, you know, you can – your doctor's more than willing to help you out as long as there's viability, as long as the blood work shows that, you know, that basically so they can't get in trouble for you know, a prescribing test, you know?
Yeah, so, exactly. Yeah. And I don't know how it works in other countries. It's probably easier to prescribe it than it is here, I bet.
I bet it is.
Yeah, so I would go in there with the labs, like Veej said. And for me, his biggest sort of driving point
is the depression, for sure.
Because that could be the reason why he's on med. That might be his fix. Yeah. He may not need the medicine. Maybe it's because he's had low testosterone his whole young life or whatever.
Yeah.
So that's where I would start.
Yep. Yep, definitely start there, and then just kind of take it from there, man. You know, it's like I don't know. Gosh, I guess if you had to, you kind of have to go underground. You know, eventually. You know,
so. No, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. We don't know anything about that, but I've heard that you can do that.
Yes,
but obviously you want to go legal routes first and take care of yourself and get a prescription. I don't see why you couldn't get a prescription just by pleading your case, you know, and maybe even shedding a tear while you're talking to them. That would definitely help, I would think.
I think so too.
You get on their good side there. Make them feel sorry for you. You'll definitely
help. Yeah. But January, that's almost like
– That's a half a year away, man.
Half a year away, yeah. That's craziness.
That sucks. You'd be like, just go be depressed for 6 months. We'll take care of you in January. It'll be fine.
You know? Exactly.
That's bullshit. Yeah. But I think that's it, Doc. Is that all we got this week?
That's it.
That's good.
Knock them
That's
out.
Good. That's good. We knock them out. And good timing for our show. You know, we're right about the hour and a half mark, so that's perfect. We don't bore the shit out of any more of our listeners and give them exactly what they want, you know? So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, man. Good questions this week. The labs were good.
Yeah, love it. Love it.
Yeah, I really, really want to push everyone to put the questions over at the Advices Forum. Who knows? The Gmail's fine. It's easy for me. I check it. But it's been really nice to read these right off the screen.
Yeah, it's like luxurious almost.
For both, because we both can see it. I don't have to send. So the Gmail questions, I still try to send them over to VJ. And being that I am like not that technically savvy, sometimes it becomes hectic and hairy.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah. That's a wrap for this show, Doc. What do you got going on? You have a day off today, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm off today. Work the next 2 days.
So no glute training today, no hip thrusts or anything.
No, I did legs yesterday. Probably going to go do some shoulders and chest today.
Ooh, good day for that. Good day.
Yeah. I'm going to eat and just chill and.
Oh, hey, I wanted to tell you, I started. One of my pet manatees actually started a new research chemical. So I was thinking about. I just wanted to kind of announce that here. So I'm trying. I'm having them try S4, which is anadrin, which is a SARM, a true SARM, not like MK677 or something, which is not a SARM, but an actual SARM, selective androgen receptor modulator. So I'm taking a very, very minute dose because in medical journals, it's these doses that they're prescribing are very, very small. And it's hilarious because, you know, how bodybuilders are, they're fucking nuts, right? They think, oh, yes. Well, hey, if 3 milligrams is great, then 50 milligrams is going to be even better. Unfortunately, if you go on online and look up S4/anadrin and look at the doses these guys are doing, they're using like 50 to 75 milligrams to 100 milligrams, and they're getting these wacky side effects to where like they can't see at night. They've got all these optical stuff going on. It's like, how dumb do you have to be to put up with side effects to where you could potentially lose your eyesight? Is it it's fucking
yeah? It's nuts, man. You know, according to my research, that the S4 is the most potent one, real supposed to be anyway.
Supposed to be, yeah. It's supposed
as
to be.
As far as the SARMs go. And you know what's funny? I was going to ask you about that at the beginning of the show because we did a, you know, talking through the week, you mentioned something about that. And I didn't know if you wanted to.
Oh, yeah. I don't mind at all.
I'm get just, into you know, that. Yeah.
No,
yeah,
not
yeah.
at all. No, I kind of wanted to just to put it out there just so that, you know, have a starting point here. But I'm only using, I think, 12 milligrams altogether a day. And that's on training days. On non-training days, I'm just using 6 milligrams. If you look at the literature, even Osterine, people were getting good results from Osterine at 3 milligrams.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And most of these companies are putting shit out. The lowest you can find dose is just 10 milligrams. Is that, I mean, it's crazy to me.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's how bodybuilding is.
I right? know. What the fuck is wrong with these? Our culture is all fucked up, man. So I'm using a very minute dose, close to what the studies were showing. And I'm remaining side effect free for now. I can tell there's just a little bit of water retention. But if I drop it back down to 6 milligrams, I can get – like I got a pretty retarded pump yesterday from using it pre-workout, and that was only at, you know, 6.5 milligrams. So
now I'm sure you are, but are you running that alongside your baseline TRT?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Yep.
Yeah. That sounds interesting. You'll have to keep us updated.
Yeah. Because I mean, most people are not used. They're just, you know, over the counter. They're using it, but they have no TRT going on. I don't know that that's a smart move. These things, they will affect your hypopituitary axis. They will. They have to. In one manner or another, they will. Especially if you start doing ridiculous doses. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, that should be interesting. I'll be interested because we know who you are. You're the not only the brown guy, you are the side effect guy.
I'm the side effect king. Nobody gets them like I do. So, but you know, and I've been using it for about 3 days now. This is my third day on it, and I would know by now if this was not going to work. Because even at Anavar, at like a lighter dose of like 10 milligrams or 15 milligrams, I could tell in a day. In a day, I could tell you that, you know, this is too much. It's causing too much water retention. I look like poo. I got retarded pumps, but I don't give a shit about that. I can eat some fucking Cap'n Crunch and get some retarded pumps. You know what I mean? I don't need any Anavar to do that. But I'm very sensitive, so I can always tell you if I'm going to like something or not very quickly. And so far, I am liking this stuff. There's, like I said, just a tad bit of water retention, but nothing – nothing that's super noticeable. I can still see all my abs. I took those pictures yesterday. I was doing cable crossovers. I put it on Instagram. I don't know if you saw it.
I did.
And then I hit some poses and stuff. And you know, I'm harder and leaner this week than I was last week. And I don't know.
And I'm,
you know,
I'm bigger and fatter this week. There you
go. You're on vacation. This summertime is vacation for you. You don't have to worry about that. So, but you know, I'm just putting it out there and letting the folks know that experiment is going on, and I'll give a full report in probably in about 4 weeks or so. Probably maybe less than that. I could give some updates here and there. So
I like your research, and your manatee should keep us updated. Speaking of how'd you like that picture of me as a child yesterday?
I was shocked, man. I thought that was Stevie. I thought you were posting a picture of your son and you. And I was just like, okay, well, let's see what he's talking about here, you know? And then you're like, I told my son that, you know, if he starts lifting weights, you know, he can, you know, totally change his physique. And I was like, I totally agree. Absolutely. Start him now. And then you're like, that's a picture of me when I was 12. I was like, get the fuck out of here. Holy shit. You guys are like spitting images of each other.
I can't believe it. His face is definitely like me. But what I was trying to show him was, you know, he's a bigger kid.
He's a
right?
big boy. Sure, sure.
But he's nothing like I was. In that picture right there, I was about his age. And what's funny is those two pictures I sent, I think I was about 200 pounds in both pictures.
Yeah, right. 200 pounds lean and then 200-pound 12-year-old chubbers.
Oh, my God. I was as round as a freaking – and the gear I had on was beautiful, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Scott nailed it. He's like, that looks like something from merry-go-round in the 80s. I said, that's where it was from.
that's awesome. Yeah. That's
good times.
Good times. All right, Doc. I got to get moving. I got to get some breakfast in me. I did my cardio. Oh, my God. It's been 6 hours ago already. I did my morning cardio. Can you believe that shit? That's crazy.
God, you're going to have to take your old man nap.
Yeah, I'm going to need early, maybe. I'm going to go eat and then take an old man nap. But that's on the docket for now. I don't got to train the rest of the day, which is good. I just got some cardio to do later on. But that's the end of it for me. But man, Doc, that's it for our show this week. Submit your questions, and we will tackle it again next week. But for now, the doctors are out.
See ya.